Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Welcome all to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here on another Wednesday night as we broadcast live on Facebook. If you want to reach the show, you can do that. It's been a little bit. We had a week off last week, so kind of get into the flow of things again here. My email address is fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. Took a week off last week because we had our physical exercise episode, and Mitch Wade, one of the guys, is in Idaho, and they had some fires to deal with. So, and I could use just a small break. I didn't have any backup content to deal with because we had an amazing walk and roll event that Saturday prior, and a little respite, and then we're back at it, and we have some amazing guests today for you as well, and hope you're excited to join us in the live Facebook Live on the FSHD Society radio show. So if you kind of peeked at the webinar series, this last series talked about the 100 Questions and Answers of Muscular Dystrophy is a book written by Dr. Wagner. And we're going to talk a little bit to her today. We're going to talk also to her colleague, Dr. Doris LeYoung as well, and talk about the Kruger Institute, and KKI, I believe, abbreviated, and talk a little bit about their work there as well. So a lot in store today. Obviously, your questions are always welcome. You can use Facebook Live. That is up and rolling right now. I'm just starting to generate to see where I can find that myself to kind of watch your comments as they roll in and questions if you have some. And I know the webinar went very well. I watched it. I really enjoyed it. I had some follow-up questions because I did not watch it live. So the fact we get this great opportunity again, I think, is just a great opportunity. So I'm glad we can do it. So without further ado, I think I'd like to introduce our amazing guests. They are on the phone on a group call here. We couldn't get Zoom going. That's okay, right? We always pivot and we adapt as we do so well. And we welcome in now Doctors Catherine Wagner and Doris LeYoung. Hello, how are you guys doing?
Hello. Hi.
So thanks, guys, for being here. I know you joined me on Zoom when we first started this interesting setup, and that didn't cooperate. So I just thought, well, we're just going to do it this way. We'll do it old school radio style. We get you on a nice conference call. So unfortunately, no one can see your faces, but they can hear your voices loud and clear. And we might have some questions as we roll through, because some of the things we're talking about is the book titled 100 Questions and Answers About Muscular Dystrophy that Dr. Catherine Wagner wrote. I purchased the book and paged through it with, I kind of went right to the spots I found most interesting. So I was a little selfish in how I browsed through it to try to generate some questions. I thought it was phenomenal. I actually want to pass this on to like my parents and other people that want to know more about the disease and like, here, read this. So we're going to talk about that as well as what you guys are doing at the Kenny Kruger Institute. So why don't we do this? Why don't we start a little bit with Dr. Catherine Wagner? Introduce yourself a little bit. I know you were just on the webinar a couple days ago, but kind of reintroduce yourself, let the audience know a little bit about you.
Sure. Thanks for having me. I hope everybody is safe and healthy during these difficult times. I am the current director of the Center for Genetic Muscle Disorders at Kennedy Krieger and a professor of neurology and neuroscience at Johns Hopkins. I see both children and adults with muscular dystrophy, run clinical trials, trying to develop novel therapeutics, and I have a laboratory that is focused on discovering and evaluating novel therapeutics in animal models.
Wow, that's fascinating. And you had the time to write this book as well with all the work that you're doing.
Well, it took me a little while.
Absolutely.
But yeah. I got it done.
And now you, Dr. Doris Leung, a little bit about yourself.
Oh, hi. Well, thank you for inviting me. So I've been working at the Kennedy Krieger Institute since 2010. I started there as a postdoctoral research fellow after I finished my neuromuscular training. I've been there since then. I work on our clinical trials. I see patients. Most recently, I have been working on a project on looking at whole body MRI in FSH in particular.
Yeah, I did look at that a little bit, the whole body MRI, and how does that, I watched some of, I think it was like a past video series that the FSHD Society had, so that it might have been a couple years back. I honestly did not notice the date, but I know it wasn't necessarily recently, but I did find it fascinating with the MRI because I've had MRIs done, but never a full body. How does that help within this disease and studying it?
So I think one of the, as we started to accumulate, a few trials under our belt, I think that people are starting to understand that a lot of the measures that we use, strength testing, walk tests, are difficult to work with in multiple different ways. A lot of it is sort of, can be really dependent on effort, fatigue, and so people are really interested, I think, and I think that there really is a need for muscle biomarkers that are, replicable, but also can detect very, very small increments of change. I think that, a lot of the standard strength measures are pretty good at detecting large jumps in muscle strength or function. Really difficult to find these much more sensitive biomarkers. So this was something that that Dr. Wagner and I have been working on, together since I first started. And we said, well, I think it would be interesting to do a project on MRI. And so we found partnerships within Hopkins. And it had just so happened that one of our colleagues was developing a program for a whole body MRI.
Yeah, that's because when I've gone to my neurologist, they'll have me do what they said, baseline. And it was, some respiratory work or, work up and those kind of things and a little bit of strength and flexibility and that kind of stuff. So would this full body MRI help within that? Like if someone is recently diagnosed, to developing a baseline of where you are and then get one later to see where the regression is?
Interestingly, I don't think we're there yet. Mm-hmm. In terms of incorporating whole body imaging mm-hmm. into your routine medical care. Mm-hmm. And I think partly it is, we haven't, there are a lot of groups that are actively pursuing this now, but primarily as a research measurement. Because I think what makes a compelling case for introducing a test into your clinical practice is whether or not you're going to use it to change the management. I don't think that there is, well-supported evidence that we should be making decisions based on these MRI findings.
Okay. I just had to ask, because that's where, I am obviously not a doctor. I don't even play one on TV. And I always try to, ask the questions that I believe that maybe someone listening might be thinking, hey, would this be something that we would be seeing in the future to kind of track if it's progress or it's regression and how this disease is attacking us or where? And they might find it fascinating if that is possible, it's possible that that could be the case. So thank you for answering that. I think it gives people a little good sense and direction of what the full body MRI is all about. Now I kind of wanted to pivot a little bit, and I think some of these questions based off a little bit of the book, The 100 Questions and Answers About Muscular Dystrophy. You both might have, obviously, some input to add, of course, especially Dr. Catherine Wagner, who authored the book. But and incidentally, folks, you can pick this up out there on Amazon, like I did, and it's a great book. I call it really definitely a resource book. It is organized in such a way where it has great, articles, resource tools, breaks it down perfectly from, nutrition and mental health, even talks a little bit about new therapeutic options and machines like Cough Assist and these kind of things. It really is, I think, a must have, in my opinion, if you are someone that has this disease or if you're a loved one that wants to understand it better, that a loved one has the disease and you just want to know more about it. So, Catherine, to start off, where did the, I don't know if it's idea or maybe the inspiration or where it all started when you started to create the book?
Yeah, so I think that having muscular dystrophy and having FSHD in particular is challenging on many fronts. And one of the ways that I don't think it should be challenging is getting the right information. So having a resource that gives you information in addition to you will hopefully be getting a lot of information from your physician and from the FSHD Society, but having a resource to turn to answer some of your questions was a goal of mine.
Mm-hmm. And it was let me ask this. How long did it take to put all this together?
I think I took approximately a year. One thing that I think makes the book really relatable and enjoyable is that I have a number of patients who comment on the questions and answers. So they provide their own perspectives. So Lillene Walters, who has FSHD and her son has FSHD, contributed substantially mm-hmm. to the book.
Yeah, that is the truth. There is some great input from patients in within this book, and it gives a nice point of view reference as well. I really did enjoy that part or those parts of it. If it was Vicky's comments or Lillian's and so on. Yeah, those are great because it felt like, and I don't want to make it sound cruel, but that I was being represented, like in the book, that this was written, with someone that has the disease or struggling with that. And I thought that was a great point of view to add to it. Was that something that you wanted to do right away when you were kind of brainstorming how the book was going to be written?
It was, I have learned a lot from my patients. Let's take equipment, for example. Mm-hmm. I am always learning about what's new, what's best from my patients. And I wanted people to have that input from a few people who really had experienced a lot and were in the know.
If someone was recently diagnosed that is listening, let's say right now or maybe on the playback when they find the show later and they're looking for a little guidance, they might ask, where do I go? I mean, this is obviously one great resource they already found by listening to this, and maybe they've already found the FSHD Society. But even when it comes to, good health care, ways to be properly diagnosed, or maybe they haven't been diagnosed yet, maybe they have an inkling that something's off and they think that this might be it. What kind of recommendations, would you give for them?
I think if you're newly diagnosed or have suspicions, for instance, maybe other family members have FSHD and you have similar signs or symptoms, I think the first line of information would be from a neurologist and hopefully from a neuromuscular specialist. So after doing a residency in neurology, then you may choose to do special fellowship training, and a neuromuscular fellowship would really give you that experience with the muscular dystrophies. So I think that that's where you should start. But the other things that you've mentioned, the FSHD Society, this book, other or patients with FSHD are all good resources.
Now, when I was diagnosed about 4 years ago, I was surprised that there were some people, when I was starting to hear their stories over these last 4 years, that they didn't want to come out and say something about their disease, that they kind of held back, where I was kind of the opposite, feeling that I kind of wanted to be loud about it because I never heard of it. I heard of muscular dystrophy, just not what I had. And I kind of thought, well, this is a great time to educate people a little bit or let them understand what's going on. I never thought about, holding off or not putting it in the forefront of even some of the conversations that I would have. Hey, this is what's happening, if they'd ask. What kind of advice would you give those people out there that are struggling with, do I say something or not? If it's their family members or whatnot, or you could even possibly drift that question into the work world, right? Where people maybe are struggling, when do I tell my boss? So I guess we have a two-part question.
Yeah. Yeah. So I certainly have encountered that. I have patients who have not even told their family members about their diagnosis. And those are really very individual decisions. In terms of telling your family members, it can be extremely helpful to your family to know that this disease is in the family, that depending on their relationship to you, that they might be at risk. Allow them to make some decisions about their life. But it's a very personal decision. Mm-hmm. In terms of the workplace, it is important to share that you have a disability when that is impacting your job. You do not have to actually reveal FSHD, but if for example you are having pain in the shoulder regions from sitting and typing all day, and that is at risk of impacting your job, it's very important for you to tell your boss before it really has a substantial impact, so that you can get accommodations, and that so you do not get any negative evaluations. Mm-hmm. Once you have a negative evaluation, it doesn't go away because you say, oh well, I've have a disability. You actually have to declare your disability first. And then in the school for younger people, I think sharing with the school and the classmates is incredibly helpful, that the teachers can be another set of eyes for you to see and report on how your child is doing, whether there are any difficulties for which accommodations should be made. And in terms of the other children, it's usually really very helpful for them to know just a little bit about, you know, why is this a friend not smiling at me, for example, or why is he a slow runner? And once they have an understanding of the disease, children tend to be a lot more compassionate, and they tend to protect, befriend others in a way that might not happen if they just see that this child is different than they are.
Yeah, I think that having that come out, especially in school, you know, to kind of have that explanation out there, I can only imagine that it would be nothing but helpful, at least to understand somebody's struggle, you know, what they're kind of going through and what they're up against. An explanation sometimes helps if it's the staff or the, you know, the people that are involved, especially if it's a young child, if it's accommodations even, right? I know that I've struggled, though, with the work side, when I was working, of when to tell my boss and sought out different advice. This book, if I would have had it in my hand, would have been hugely helpful and at that time, but I did get good advice nonetheless. And you're right, it is I guess a personal choice of when to come out, as I've been told. You know, that's kind of how it works for a lot of people. The term that they use is like, when do I say this to family members or friends that this is something I'm struggling with? How about when I was diagnosed, going back to that, one of the first things that I necessarily didn't cross my mind, but it did cross my wife's mind, was, you know, passing on muscular dystrophy to family members. When it comes to, you know, this being genetically passed on, to phrase it in a question, you know, is there certain points or perspectives that maybe people should think about that they might not generally think about in regards to, you know, passing the gene on, certain facts that they maybe should know?
Yeah. So the fact that most people on the call will know is that this is an autosomal dominant disorder, so that each of your children has a 50-50% chance of inheriting the genetic mutation, which is a deletion that causes FSHD. What they may not be aware of is that their child's FSHD may be very different than theirs. And I think a lot of people say, well, you know, my disease is mild. It hasn't impacted me that much, particularly if they're, you know, young adults. That is very frequently the case. And so they may not see it as a very crucial decision about whether they're passing the gene on. Mm-hmm. However, their children could be much more severely affected than they are. It is also possible that the children would be less affected than mm-hmm. they are. But we do see quite a bit of variability within families, and so I think that's really worth keeping in mind as you plan your pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good fact advice. I know in the book, there's a chapter or a question in regards to that, right? An area that is in regards to that. So I do implore people to purchase the book. And if you're inquiring about that specific subject in regards to muscular dystrophy, I would beeline right to that. It does describe it in great detail and a simple understanding to kind of guide you through, especially if you're deciding to have a family, right? If that's the way that you're thinking about it. Kind of staying, though, in the lines of being active in the FSHD community or the MD community, you know, there's clinical trials happening. And this might be kind of a question now for either one of you, because I know with Dr. Leung doing the, you know, full body MRI, I'm imagining that you needed, you know, subjects, you needed volunteers. What's your take on if people are on the fence to be a part of either clinical trials or case studies or things of that nature?
Yeah. Okay. So I'll go ahead and start. I honestly, you know, I think that one thing that I think is really worth knowing is that I feel like we do have kind of a different relationship with The people who come for research, some of them are patients, are clinic patients, but some are also are just here for the research. And I think that increasingly, how we see them is not so much the traditional doctor-patient relationship, but more so that we're actually working together, that we're a team, and with a shared goal of coming together and answering scientific questions about FSHD. And so I kind of feel like I get to know them a lot better. Usually a research study kind of requires a lot more visits, a lot more contact, a lot more FaceTime. And so I think that's something that I don't know that I realized was going to be the case when I first started doing clinical research. And I think that that's something that's been really positive. That's something that my research patients have enjoyed a lot.
Mm. Yeah, to have that kind of connection, right, to the people that are going to be involved, you're saying is, yeah, it is a, it's a
right.
huge,
I,
it's
you
a
know,
huge
and,
thing.
And so, yeah, so yeah, being involved in a trial is honestly a lot of work. I think that it's important to really know what you're getting into, because it can be an enormous commitment in time. And so I think that it's, I think that those, the people who come together and come out and are doing the research, in a lot of ways it has an impact that goes sort of beyond them. It goes beyond even their families. This is an enterprise that puts new knowledge into the world. Mm. And so even if there are trials that don't show that a drug is efficacious, we have learned something from that, and I think those are sort of the hidden positives about participating in clinical research that people really shouldn't be underestimated. It's a powerful thing.
Yeah, it is. It is a powerful thing. I've heard a lot of people that have signed up for clinical trials and studies, and I did that myself through the University of Minnesota just because it was close. Went there for a day, was part of two studies at the same time. I was treated extremely well. When you were talking about making that connection, I had many conversations prior. I felt like I was being taken care of, not just the physical sense, but that my accommodations were handled, that I had a good place to stay and that I was comfortable when I arrived. And I mean, it was great. It was great. It made me feel like I was definitely being a part of something that was bigger than me, which was my goal. I wanted to be able to help the community no matter what it meant. The fact they had to pick and prod and take muscle from me, whatever's left there, was all fine. But it's like the actual act of things maybe weren't always pleasant, but the people that I was surrounded by during those things made it more pleasant, or as pleasant as it could be. And so I totally agree with you, Doctor. That's 100% is that connection that you can make with the people that are volunteering, right? They're taking their time and their body in some cases and giving it to science, as they say. The question we had from the Facebook live viewers was from a Robert Rowe. He says, "We will miss you. Thanks for all your work at KKI. Be safe in Switzerland." I think he's talking to you, Dr. Wagner, is that right?
That is. In a few weeks, I am leaving Kennedy Krieger, Johns Hopkins, the United States, and will be working on drug development for muscular dystrophies as the global head of neuromuscular disorders at Roche. In Basel, Switzerland, and it is a bittersweet change for me. I have really loved the patients that I've worked with, many for 15 years or so, and saying goodbye to them is difficult. But I'm hoping to be able to really make a bigger impact in this new role, and I'm leaving them in really good hands. So Dr. Leung will take over as director of the Center for Genetic Muscle Disorders. As she's described, she has a wealth of experience in FSHD as well as other muscular dystrophies. And with her clinical research expertise in FSHD, I think she's really going to be an ideal person to help people find novel treatments.
Dr. Wagner, you are very good at segues. I was going to segue, then that kind of slid it over to Dr. Doris Leung of, talk a little bit about, that, I guess, new role that you're kind of walking into.
I will be taking over the clinical program and also our clinical trials program. So I think kind of my first priority is really just maintaining a seamless transition of care for our patients. A lot of them I've actually gotten to know myself over the years. So I think that I really think that our patients are going to find this to be a pretty seamless transition. And we're also going to be working on really trying to bring new clinical trials into the center, forming new collaborative partnerships, and it's going to be really exciting.
Wow, that sounds like a little bit of a teaser there. New clinical trials. Is there anything more you can comment on that? I just sense that there might have been some ears that perked up that were listening that might go, "What does that mean?" or "What is she talking about?"
I do not have anything, very specific at this point that we can say. But I think that this is looking ahead. I think that, I think that we've really started to establish a real infrastructure for developing trials networks and collaborative partnerships. And so I think that, I think that it's we're kind of at a point where, like, I think the momentum towards developing more clinical trials in FSHD is imminent.
I totally agree, and I love that there's so much of that happening. I'm slightly new to this world of FSHD. Like I said, only has been about 4, maybe 5 years now since I've known about it and trying to understand what's all the working pieces and parts, not just what's happening in our bodies, but on the outside of how is any research going to help and drug development and all these things. And I get this sense that it's been getting ramped up. There's more and more things happening. Am I just looking at it through rose-colored glasses, or is there a little truth behind that?
It's always been very hard to sort of balance optimism with realism. I think that what I'm looking at, I think partly is just sort of like the verbiage, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's like sometimes when somebody says, "Oh, there's a treatment around the corner," and mm-hmm. like around the corner to one person might mean like next week, right? But science is like the incremental growth of scientific knowledge is such that, around the corner could be years also.
Right.
And so I think that, it's, I always tell my patients, it's like, I cannot predict the future. There's honestly many, many steps, that we still have to take in really understanding what FSHD is like in its patient population. Where, only very recently there was a new gene that was discovered that causes FSHD too. And so, in a lot of ways in kind of all phases of research, from like the basic science to the translational to the clinical research, there is still a lot to learn about FSH. I don't know if I answered the question.
No, I think you answered it well. I think you answered it well because, we're all obviously all hopeful, that treatment coming to as Mark Stone would say, coming to our families, he doesn't necessarily use the term around the corner, but he's definitely, you know, said, you know, we'd like it by 2025. And that obviously is a goal that is set, and the FSHE Society hopes it is achievable and they keep that goal, you know, straight in their eye line. So, and I think that's a good thing to keep people focused on something, a positive thing, a positive direction. I do understand what you mean by being realistic in comparison, you know. So it is. It is. I get the sense it can be. You got to kind of tread lightly. So it can be a little bit. Yeah. You don't want to give false hope. You don't want to give a false positive, as I say, to somebody, because around the corner is about perspective. But the fact that there's very important and smart people, caring people right now, working on things, including both of you, is really what means the most to me. To tell you the honest truth, it's not being ignored. And that's, I think, is what hits home for me. So, and I think I can speak for most that are listening, like, we matter. Look, all these people trying to help and trying to do something about it. So that's kind of my way of saying thank you to both of you for, you know, writing this book and doing the research and all the work you do, and all that you've put into your careers to help us. So thank you. I had an email question that came in for the book, the 100 questions that we're talking about, 100 questions and answers about muscular dystrophy. And this person was kind of specifically talking about exercise a little bit. And I don't know if they saw the webinar or not, but they were talking about, you know, what is possible safer or not safe exercise. And when you're exercising, how do you handle any pain or fatigue? I know I'm starting to go through a little bit of an exercise regimen that I was given from one of our recurring guests. He comes on and talks about the physical side of FSHD, and he talks specifically about how to have workout plans that are catered to people's limitations within this disease, but yet can still help and give them, you know, positive results by yet still being safe. So, but for you and for your point of view, Dr. Wagner, what would you, or how would you answer this question about exercise for this person?
Sure. So that is a perennial question, and the medical field has bounced back and forth on its answers. I think one of the reasons it is so unclear is that there is very little data. However, there have been some trials of aerobic exercise in FSHD, which did appear to show benefits to patients with increased endurance and or strength. And there certainly hasn't been any indication that exercise is negative or damaging. I would have a few cautions, however, to make sure that that's the case. So I would try to limit what are called eccentric contractions, where you ask a muscle to bear a load and lengthen at the same time. And it's hard to exercise without any eccentric contractions, but some things are better than others in that regard. So for example, weightlifting is probably not a good activity for people with FSHD. However, swimming, riding a stationary bike, walking, those are really very good activities. The clinical trials mostly use cycling, mm-hmm. Stationary bikes, and so I am somewhat of a fan of that. Other cautions are if your muscle is hurting, then you should stop. If you have fatigue, I don't know that you necessarily have to stop. I think that fatigue is a natural consequence of working your muscle. But if it's painful or you have that lactic acid burn, then you should stop. If the next day or 2 days later, 24 or 48 hours later, your muscle is achy, then you have to sort of rethink what you did and scale it back during the next exercise. exercise session.
That's good advice. Yeah. Kind of listen to your body, right? As they say, maybe know the difference between the pain of what muscular dystrophy is giving you, but yet maybe the pain of you tried to work a muscle a little bit with an exercise. I have a bad tendency to push it, you know, push through the pain and try to get some results. But I think I like your advice better, doctor, and that's kind of more listen to your body and watch the weightlifting, which I was told that right off the bat when I was done with my first initial visit with my neurologist, where he asked specifically what was I doing, you know, for physical, you know, work, and told him the job I was doing. He was like, oh, that might not be very long. I was, you know, warehouse work, moving a lot of heavy items, this and that. Might want to think about a change there, he said. Might want to think about ease up on the weightlifting, because I was working out like crazy, because I was 40 and I'm like, I have no ab muscles. What is going on? I've been working out like crazy. And that led to part of the then explanation. So I'm assuming, yeah, your advice would be don't push through the pain so much. Listen first.
Yes.
Excellent. Piggybacking off of exercise, usually people then ask about nutrition, and that's what kind of sparked my mind a little bit when I read the question about exercise. What kind of are the must foods that you would say, you know, people should be gravitating to that have muscular dystrophy?
So I think that I will punt that a bit because there are very specific recommendations of the balance of your diet between protein, carbohydrates, and fat, the total amount of protein you should be aiming for, the total amount of fluids you should be aiming for, and you know, if you don't have access or don't want to get to the book, or even if you do, a really good resource is a nutritionist.
Right.
It probably makes sense for everyone with muscular dystrophy to see a nutritionist at least once to map out what they're consuming, make sure that they're getting enough macro and micro nutrients, and make sure those balances are correct.
Nice. I just wrote down nutritionist and circled it like a million times. I'm seeing my neurologist on Monday, so I'm going to say, I need to see a nutritionist, I believe. Would you recommend somebody? That's great. That's great. Thank you for that. That's perfect. So before we let you guys go, I know we're going to definitely plug the book, and I will before we close the show for sure. It's the book titled 100 Questions and Answers About Muscular Dystrophy, written by Dr. Catherine R. Wagner, and they got the FSHD Society little logo on there. I love that on the front page, along with the MDA and the Parent Project Muscular Dystrophy. The publisher is J&B Learning, or Jones and Bartlett Learning, excuse me. So thanks for that book, and I know we can get it on Amazon. That's where I got it. But if people want to find out more about both of you specifically, perhaps, or maybe the work that you're doing, is there a way that they can do that?
Yeah, so I think that they can find out more about what's happening at Kennedy Krieger by our website, which lists the clinical trials that we're doing, gives information on how you can set up an appointment in our interdisciplinary clinic. So that's probably the best approach. If you don't have that capability, then the clinic coordinator's name is Angie, and her telephone number is 443-923-9525, and she can get you any information or schedule an appointment for you.
Nice. How about you, Dr. Lee Young? Any same plugs of information of, you know, reaching out to learn more about you, or a different path perhaps?
Actually, no, that was correct. All the correct information flows were along the way, you know, because Angie actually coordinates the clinic for both of us.
Well, thank you guys very much for joining us and all you do for our community and joining us here on the FSHD Society Radio Show. We wish you the best and safe travels, Dr. Wagner, to Switzerland.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So that is our featured guest tonight, Dr. Catherine Wagner and Dr. Doris Leung. And sounds like kind of one is sliding into the role of the other, which is very exciting. I know Robert Rowe was talking about that a little bit. So thank you, Robert, for that nice segue. I wanted to make sure that we brought both of these guests in. And thank you to June Kinoshita for helping us coordinate that to get these great guests in, as she does so well, as well as Lee Reynolds for helping with the show, as she does so eloquently each month. A lot of work happening with the show, and getting these kind of guests on is part of that work. So always thank you to all of them. A little bit before, you know, we're starting to kind of wrap up shop a little bit here, but I do love the fact that we have people from around the world that come on here. I just couldn't help but make sure I say something from greetings from Rosario, Argentina, Gabby Grinda. Welcome. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying, but thank you for being here. And thanks for connecting with the show. Don't forget to let your friends know about it. The radio show. It's a great source that they can get involved or watch the show, watch the replays of it. I know they're available on Facebook at FSHD Society's site there through their Facebook page. Also, anywhere you find podcasts, pretty much we're going to be there. So that's Google and Spotify and so many other platforms. Maybe go on your player. We're somewhere almost at 1,000 all-time listens, which is not bad considering the type of show this is. It's not like we're you know, talking about all subjects from all around the world. We are very obviously topic specific and a very tight community, but keep spreading the word. We'd love to have more listeners get involved. You can always email me if you want to perhaps be on the show, or there's a subject that you want to talk about. Maybe you have a question for me. Like Tim, like what else do you do besides this or whatever? Or if you want to reach out to me, maybe set up a time to chat, because you just want to chat, I can do that too. My email is fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. It's a best way to get a hold of me, pretty much open all the time. Next week's show is, I always have to check my schedule because, you know, we're doing weekly shows. I don't want to misplug something that's not coming. Yeah, that would be horrible. No, that's the next event, I think, on the FSHD Societies. We welcome in, and some of you might just know this by their first names. Actually, I don't even know their last name. That might be one of our questions. Jenny and Tony are going to join us. They have this amazing YouTube channel out there as they kind of go through life. They're newly married and tackling FSHD and relationships. And they're going to talk about their relationship, their marriage, their YouTube channel. So join us for that. And that's on the 30th. That's in a week from today. The next webinar on October 1st about COVID-19, key investigators into this, I believe they were like a questionnaire that was released. Katie Eingender and Leanne Lewis are going to join us on the webinar. Then on 10-1 also is the Connecticut Connections. That is the Connecticut group meeting, the virtual meeting, 7 p.m. East for that. On October 3rd, I can't believe I have to say October. Man, this year is flying. Thank God, in a way, right? 11 a.m. Central Time, FSHer Brian Dembelt from Fargo, North Carolina, I believe, is having a that northern region of like North Carolina, Minnesota. They're having a virtual meeting. Check that out at fshdsociety.org. I think I might actually try to crash that one a little bit and peek my head in and see how that's going. That's the kind of a little north of me, but kind of in my neck of the woods, so to speak. Other great virtual events coming to mark your calendars. Save the date, 10/24 from 12 noon to 5 p.m. Mountain Time. It's the 5th annual UPIN Family Conference Program. That's Utah Program for Inherited Neo-Disorders. We all know what NEO is. Disorders. That's going to be a live event on October 24th. Then looking forward into the future, into November, the KUMC Family Day on 11/7 starting at 9 a.m., going to 2 p.m. Central Time. That's the Kansas University Medical Center Family Day. So that's going to be fun. So we got another show coming up next week, and I hope you can join us for that. Robert Rowe interview. Yes, he has emailed me, Victoria Sheldon Ryer. Thank you for adding that comment. No, Robert, I'm not ghosting you, but I will definitely set it up. Let's just set it up. We're going to set it up. You might have to be into like November, but we'll get you on, Robert. I think people are calling for Robert Rowe, so we will get him on. I want to listen to my people that are on the show. It is your show, not mine, so we'll get Robert in. That'll be an upcoming guest, so stay tuned for that. Thanks all for watching the show, listening to the show. Find it on your podcast platforms. I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. Thank you to our guests, Dr. Wagner and Dr. Lee Young, for being here. Check out this book, The 100 Questions and Answers About Muscular Dystrophy. I bought mine on Amazon. You can too. Take care, and we'll see you next week. You've been listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show.